AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Monday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Glad to have you with us. Coming up on the show today, we are going to be looking at absentee ballot statistics here in Minnesota and comparing how many people have requested ballots this year as compared to previous election cycles. And as you can guess, it's way more than what we had back in 2018, 16, or 14. Also ahead, we'll be talking about the renaming of a portion of Chicago Avenue to George Floyd Avenue. Tina Smith is proposing a bill that would formally legalize cannabis. And then we'll be talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, of course, just announced that her cancer has resurfaced. We're going to be talking about what a potential court vacancy would look like this fall, and also a look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg's record. While for the most part she's been a pretty stalwart liberal justice, she has not necessarily been liberal on several other rulings throughout her career. So we're going to be talking about that coming up in the second segment today. Open phone lines for the entire hour at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, as we'll take those phone calls throughout the entire hour. I want to welcome in Patrick Lilia, our producer today, who gave a very accurate weather forecast talking about some pleasant weather we are expecting this week. Man, this is like the perfect week for being outdoors. Temperatures in the 70s with sunny skies. I mean, this is absolutely phenomenal.
It's kind of funny because July was just so hot and humid, and as soon as August started, it's just been a great week to get outdoors, think about some outdoor activities that in July, you just want to sit in your air conditioner, or for me, sit in the relatively cool basement here at 950, our lower level studios, and now I just want to get out and enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm bummed I didn't ride my bike in today, so maybe I'll have to pull that thing out after I'm done with the show today. Hey, before we move on to the news, do I have already a phone caller who wants to chime in about mail-in ballots? Let's go ahead and get that covered before we get into some of the news for today. Let's talk to Joshua in Minneapolis. Hey there, Joshua.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I'm Joshua Schindemann. I'm the Green Party candidate to fill the Minneapolis City Council seat. And I just wanted to mention that we need to encourage as much as we can the mail-in ballots during this unprecedented time, and make sure that people know the ways to access it through mnvotes.org, kind of the shortened version to get people there, and to make sure they check the mailbox as frequently as they can.
All right, Joshua, do appreciate the phone call. And before you leave us here, actually, it looks like we just lost your phone call, but do appreciate that for calling in and letting folks know that they can vote for him in the August 11th election and, of course, in the general election as well. Man, phone lines are already lighting up. I haven't even gotten into a topic for today. But while Patrick mans the phone lines, let's talk a little bit about some news for today. So, at least here in the U.S., we are roughly about 6 months in to the COVID-19 pandemic. Things started to come to the U.S. in about late January or early February. Now that, of course, we are in early August, we are about 6 months into the pandemic since that's really taken hold in the U.S. And I want to read through some numbers and compare the COVID-19 pandemic to what we had to the H1N1 pandemic back in 2009, 2010, or the, I believe you could also call it the swine flu, if I'm remembering that correctly. Because people are comparing the response that we had back with H1N1 to COVID-19. And being that we are 6 months into COVID-19, I think it would be good to compare the numbers from H1N1 to COVID. So back in 2009 to 2010, when we had the H1N1 pandemic, we overall in the United States had 61 million cases. That's a lot of people that ended up getting sick from H1N1. Among the 61 million people who got sick 274,000 were hospitalized, and we ended up with 12,500 deaths. Now, if we look at the rates of the hospitalization and deaths with H1N1 from about 10 years ago, the hospitalization rate was only 0.45%, while the mortality rate was 0.02%. So less than 0.1% of people ended up dying from H1N1 back in 2009 and 2010. Now, let's look at the current COVID pandemic. We've had 4.6 million cases, which of course is less than the amount of cases we had with H1N1, although with COVID, we're nowhere near done with this thing, so that case count is surely going to skyrocket. But what's important to point out when we compare the H1N1 with COVID are the hospitality rate and the mortality rate. Now, as I brought up with H1N1, the hospitality rate was only 0.45%. The hospitalization rate for COVID-19, 8.7%. In other words, you're 19 times more likely to go to the hospital if you contract COVID-19 as compared to the old H1N1 virus of 2009 and 2010. How about the mortality rate? For COVID-19, it's roughly 3.3%. Again, the H1N1 mortality rate only 0.02%. So just to put that into perspective, just how much deadlier COVID is compared to H1N1, because I've already seen this starting to float up of people saying, well, look at how much worse things were with H1N1 during the Obama years, when if you really compare the mortality rates and the hospitality rates, we are way worse among COVID-19. In fact, even if we were to say that government officials are over-reporting the amount of deaths we're getting with COVID. In fact, let's say they're reporting 10 times more deaths than what we're actually having, just taking the conspiracy theorists' words and taking them at their word. Even if we were to say that COVID deaths were being reported at a rate of 10 times more than what they actually are, it would still end up being 16 times more deadly than what we experienced with H1N1. So some numbers to put into perspective with what's happening with the pandemic as we are roughly 6 months into it. Let's go to some other news for today. So I want to point out that, of course, Robert Pilot hosts our Tuesday version of FYI Politics called FYI Politics Rock the Vote Native Style, which means I don't host the show on Tuesday. And being that I don't host the Tuesday show, I want to point out two major events to watch for that are going to be taking place tomorrow. One is related to the sports world, but could have a big impact on how governments function and how overall kind of politics function. And the other one is a very political event. Let's start off with the more sports-related topic, and that is a big NCAA meeting, administrative meeting, which is taking place tomorrow. What's happening is that the NCAA is meeting and making a determination as to whether they are going to cancel the championships of 8 fall sports. Basically, that's every fall sport except for football, which technically isn't governed by the NCAA. Now, the reason why this is important is that if the NCAA were to go ahead and cancel all fall sports, there's a chance that several schools and major conferences could break away from the NCAA and form their own separate division. The reason they would do that is that if the NCAA were to cancel fall sports, the reason being that among several schools, it wouldn't be a good look to cancel all the fall sports championships and yet still play college football, which of course is the big money maker. So what the rumor is that could happen tomorrow is that if the NCAA cancels fall sports, you could have the Power Five major conferences. Those are basically the biggest five conferences in college sports. That would be the Big Ten, Pac-12, SEC, ACC, and Big 12. They could break away and form their own version of college sports because they would, again, not have good optics of saying, well, we're going to still stage our college football championship, but the rest of our sports, those are canceled. That's not a very good look on our end. So if they were to break away from the NCAA, this would have a significant impact because what they could do, they could pay athletes, they could have their own union for student athletes, and of course negotiate their own television deals, which would have a big, big impact on how colleges function. Because if you have unionization and athletes who are being paid, that of course changes the structure of how schools are going to be funded, since I would think in theory, if you're almost turning college sports into like a quasi sort of amateur, sort of pro sports, you could probably take away some taxpayer funding that goes towards major college sports. But that's something to watch for, at least for tomorrow. If the NCAA cancels fall sports, we could have a major ripple effect of several major conferences breaking away from the NCAA. Patrick, I know you're kind of a sports guy. Have you been following along with this at all in terms of these power conferences breaking away? Yeah, it's really only broken over the past weekend where Sports Illustrated was saying that there were five conferences that were looking to break away. So reason I'm bringing that up is that it could completely change the way college sports function, which in turn could have a big impact on how colleges in general function and how colleges are funded if you essentially have sports break away and become kind of their own separate entity and almost kind of a quasi-pro sports league. All right, let's go to the other big political news that's going to happen for tomorrow, and that is a primary race in the U.S. Senate race in Kansas. So what's happening in Kansas tomorrow is that the Republicans are holding a primary to see who their nominee will be to run in this fall's election. The reason being is that the current incumbent Republican Senator, Pat Roberts, is retiring. On the Republican end, there are two major candidates vying for that race. One is Kris Kobach, who is the former Kansas Secretary of State, also a staunch ally of President Donald Trump. And if you remember back to 2017, he led that so-called voter fraud commission that basically found there was no voter fraud whatsoever. So Kris Kobach is one of the candidates running. The other is Roger Marshall. Now, what's key is that many of the major figures in the Republican Party want to go with Roger Marshall. They don't like Kris Kobach. The reason being is that he is not popular at all in Kansas. In fact, he already lost a race for governor back in 2018, and he's largely seen as being toxic in that state. So several prominent figures within the Republican Party and their leadership are getting behind this guy, Roger Marshall. Now, for the most part, up until about probably early July, Marshall was the heavy favorite to be the Republican nominee against Kris Kobach. But then something interesting happened. A Democratic-tied super PAC got involved in the race and spent millions of dollars helping out Kris Kobach. Even though this is a Democratic PAC, they were helping out Kris Kobach. Now, the reason why they were doing this is that they feel if Kobach is the Republican nominee, Democrats would have a better chance at winning that seat this fall. So what they've been doing, it's been really interesting strategy that they've been using in these ads, because they're not directly going out and criticizing Marshall and propping up Kobach. They're just simply stating, well, look at how much of an ally of Donald Trump Kris Kobach is, and they're kind of praising him in an indirect way to encourage Republicans to vote for Kobach in the primary, even though this is a Democratic super PAC doing this. So that's actually made this race quite a bit tighter than it was expected to be, and the primary election is held for tomorrow. So if Kobach does end up winning, the theory is that Democrats would have a better chance of winning this seat coming up this fall. By the way, their nominee is Senator Barbara Bollier, who is a former Republican who left the party back in 2018 and has the backing of several major Democratic groups. So watch that tomorrow, because if Kobach ends up winning, even if he still ends up winning the general election this fall, it would lead to the case where Republicans would have to spend resources in that seat to keep the Senate seat in Kansas red, because Kobach, in theory, would be a weaker candidate for the Republicans than Roger Marshall. That's, again, the reason why several of these Democratic super PACs are spending money to help Kris Kobach tomorrow. So it's indirect political advertising, but we see this all the time. Republicans often do this to try to prop up whichever Democratic challenger they would prefer in a primary. Now we see Democrats doing the same thing to Republicans. So this would have a big impact, because if Kobach is the nominee, even though he would likely be favored in the general election, it likely would force Republicans to move resources into that Kansas Senate race instead of spending them in other more winnable races for Republicans around the country. So something to watch for tomorrow as well. We're going to take a break here at AM 950. You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Coming up next, we are going to be talking about a potential Supreme Court vacancy. It's on the way next.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If you're running for office or a grassroots ballot initiative, getting out door-to-door made a lot of sense before coronavirus. Progressive candidates historically win elections with one-to-one voter contact, door knocking, and by organizing. With coronavirus, candidates and ballot initiatives need to pivot and recalibrate with a digital marketing strategy to provide one-to-one voter contact and organizing opportunities. An effective digital strategy will likely determine if your race goes blue this year or whether you're singing the blues. So, if you want to be singing Hail to the Chief on Election Day, Social Media MN can help. For a hassle-free consultation, contact us today at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Hi, this is Paul Metzer, inviting you to listen to the Wall of Power Radio Hour every weekend on AM 950. We are on at 6 p.m. on Saturday, 4 p.m. on Sunday. We feature artists, musicians, raconteurs, private detectives, and more. 6 p.m. Saturday night on AM 950.
Crooner's Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooner's is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
Minuteman Press Uptown is still open and printing everything, but they are taking some extra precautions. You can order by phone or online and do curbside pickup. Plus, they're offering 25% off all postcards right now for AM 950 listeners in need. That's Minuteman Press Uptown.
To say your home has been lived in these last few months is probably an understatement. Have you assessed the damage? Call the expert cleaners at Zero Res. Just mention AM 950 when you call and take $50 off your duct cleaning. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com.
Is your remote workforce putting your company at risk? Cyber criminals are targeting your employees with COVID-19-inspired emails and attacking businesses like yours. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. Rimark has the tools and expertise to enable your employees to work securely from home. If you need help getting your staff to work remotely and securely, call 651-328-8900 or go to RimarkIT.com. That's 651-328-8900 or RimarkIT.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, the Monday edition of the show. See, the unfortunate news we got over the past week is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has unfortunately had her cancer resurface. In fact, she waited 4 months to tell anyone that this was the case. Now, she has faced some criticism for the fact that she, well, waited 4 months to tell anyone that her cancer had come back. But do keep in mind, that is quicker than other justices have been reporting their health issues in the past. In fact, the best example would be Antonin Scalia. We didn't even know about several of his underlying health conditions until he was dead. So, yeah, even though Ruth Bader Ginsburg waited 4 months to tell at least the public that she had her cancer resurface. Keep in mind, in several other cases in the Supreme Court, we oftentimes don't even know about some of their underlying health conditions or any of their other incidents they face. In fact, I think going back to like 10 years ago, John Roberts, the Chief Justice, had a seizure, and it wasn't until several months later that we even found out that had happened. But with the cancer resurfacing in Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that of course has led to speculation that she might be forced to step down from the court, or unfortunately, if the cancer takes off, she could actually end up passing away, which of course would lead to a court vacancy as well. Now, Of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been very good about defending reproductive rights and lots of other issues on the court. But no matter what your position is or what office you hold or whether you're a judge, a politician, or so on or so on, I at least am very uncomfortable when people go out and idolize public figures. No matter whether they're politicians, athletes, actors, or whoever else, I'm very uncomfortable with that idea, and we've seen this really with RBG. We've seen the whole notorious RBG type of meme pop up, I think, back in 2015, and people have been looking at her as being just this really idolizing figure, and I don't think that's a fair standard to hold her to, or really anyone. In fact, it's very dangerous to do. Let's even look at the history of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because as I said, while she's been friendly on many other issues, she's also had some rulings that might not thrill progressives, including earlier this year, siding with conservatives on allowing the Atlantic Coast Pipeline to be constructed underneath the Appalachian Trail. She also sided earlier this year with conservatives on siding with them to speed up the process for the deportation of asylum speakers. Or asylum seekers, rather. So do be careful when you go out and idolize people, because I don't think that's necessarily a good thing to be doing. Now, if there were to be a vacancy with that Supreme Court seat, there's no doubt that Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump would be trying to fill that seat as quickly as possible, even though there's an obvious double standard, being that they did not fill the vacant seat back in 2016 of Antonin Scalia when he passed away. That was, of course, when Obama tried to appoint Mitch Garland, and Republicans decided not to hold any hearings to confirm him. Now, if there were a vacancy this year, it's pretty obvious. Mitch McConnell has already said he would hold Senate hearings to confirm the Supreme Court justice. Now, if there were a vacancy, I'm trying to think about this from a political strategist perspective as a Democrat. I think from a Democratic perspective, you would be better off having Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump confirm a justice before the November election. I think what could lead to a potential nightmare scenario for the Biden campaign and other Democrats is having a vacant seat and then essentially letting voters decide by choosing whichever president they think should select the Supreme Court justice. In other words, leaving it vacant until after the election. I think that could actually be very disastrous for Democrats because typically, Republicans get more fired up about court appointees and the Supreme Court, and that could really fire them up for the fall of 2020, because as we see right now, most polls show Joe Biden with a very comfortable lead, and all of a sudden, if you were to give conservatives and Republicans a reason to get fired up about 2020, not that they're not fired up already, that could add fuel to the fire to try to help Trump's reelection campaign. In fact, it could even move some of the voters who were in the Biden camp back to the Trump camp by thinking, well, I'm not comfortable with Donald Trump and the way that he goes about his politics, but it's still important to have that Supreme Court seat in the hands of a Republican president. So I would think that we would be better off, actually, if there were a vacancy, having Republicans appoint and confirm a justice before the election. I think that, in turn, would fire up the Democratic base and, more importantly, lead to reform on the Supreme Court, either court packing or entirely reforming the way terms are structured. Where right now, of course, you get a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. I'm a fan of having just every court appointee get one 10-year term. After that 10-year term, they're done. But I can see this backfiring where if there were a vacancy left open until after the November 2020 election, I could see this as helping Republicans this fall. Patrick, do you agree with that? I saw you kind of nodding your head in there.
It's kind of like a damned if they do and damned if they don't, that the Democrats just like you said, because I was thinking that, too, that was really what brought Republicans out enough in 2016 was I knew a number of people who said, I don't like Trump, but I'm voting because he's going to get to appoint someone to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. because we already knew at that time that the Scalia vacancy was there and the Republican Senate said, we're not going to let you fill this. We're going to have the voters decide. And I was also thinking, too, though, that the way that Trump is looking at this with kind of, I don't like to use this word, but kind of vulturing around that potential opening between I've got a theory that he and McConnell have already made a list of people to call the moment they get a hypothetical word that RBG is not part of the court anymore one way or another.
Oh, absolutely. You're right that they have a list ready to go. And, yeah, they would put that through as quickly as possible. Typically, it takes about 4 months to get a justice announced and then confirmed by the Senate. But they would most certainly expedite that process. And, yeah, I would get in the short term, oh, no, we would have now a 6-3 Republican majority if he were to appoint someone to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg or another liberal justice. But I think this would overall lead to a much bigger chance of having reform on the Supreme Court if you were to have another conservative justice appointed, because now you would be looking at a court that would essentially have two so-called stolen seats. And I think that would embolden even the most moderate Democrats to say, all right, we got to do something about this Supreme Court, either through court packing or completely changing the structure of how justices are appointed and confirmed to the courts. Because if there isn't a vacancy this fall, I don't think you're going to see much of a push for any sort of reform to the Supreme Court, where it'll be very comfortable for Biden and other more, we'll call them establishment-type Democrats, to say, eh, we don't necessarily want to change the system. But if you were to have yet another vacancy and another Supreme Court stolen seat, I think that would embolden several members of the party to finally give some much-needed reform to the Supreme Court. So I want to point out, I don't wish anything bad to happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I overall think it would be better to make sure she stays on the court. But if a vacancy occurs, from at least a political strategist perspective, Democrats would probably be better off by having Republicans ram through a nominee and then allow the Dems to use that as a wedge issue this fall. And I wonder if someone like Mitch McConnell could be thinking about that too, being the very calculating politician that he is. He could be sitting there thinking, well, if we leave this up to the voters, we could get Trump reelected, get our new court appointee, and of course have a chance to appoint more lower district judges, which Trump has appointed a whole ton of those over the past few years since he's taken office. All right, let's take a break and come on back with some local news. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Are you remote workers putting your company at risk? Not sure what steps to take to secure your data? Hi, I'm Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. The Rimark team is guiding our clients through these difficult times. In fact, demand has been so high, we created an easy-to-follow guide with the 5 steps to securely work from home. It's yours free. Download our 5 steps to securely work from home now at RimarkIT.com or call 651-328-8900 for a no-cost how-to discussion.
Hi, this is Laura. Listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Our individual health is connected to the health of each other, and connected to the health of the earth. We know the problems with the dominant food system, climate change, deadening soils, nitrates in the water, factory farming, injustice, concentration of wealth. How do we both as individuals and as a community step up and support a living food system which honors the earth? Tune to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. and remember to support your independent farmers.
Not only does Rudy Luther Toyota have a great selection of new vehicles, but Rudy Luther is also one of the largest volume Toyota certified used vehicle dealers in the country. They have better prices than many non-certified dealers, and all their vehicles go through a comprehensive inspection and reconditioning process. And Rudy Luther pays you top dollar for your trade-in, even if you don't buy a vehicle from them. Whether looking for an upgrade or looking to get rid of a car you no longer need, you'll get a great return with Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about outdoor fires. Sitting around a fire is the oldest, most basic form of human activity.
What's new is in the way fire is burned. We can show you how to burn cleaner with a lot less smoke.
The radiant heat and light from an open fire is unmatched. It kindles our spirits and connects us to the outdoors. And now it's easier to experience and enjoy.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs wood and gas burning fire pits and fireplaces. Let us help you experience an outdoor fire without all the smoke.
Come see the many ways you can enjoy a fire outdoors.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces strives to maintain a healthy environment for their customers and employees. They invite you to visit weekdays 9:30 to 5:30 and Saturdays 9:30 to 4. You'll find an uncrowded and comfortable social space to learn about Woodland Stoves' many indoor and outdoor fireplace products. More at woodlandstoves.com.
AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Another pleasant afternoon ahead, sunshine and 75 for the high, clear and 55 for your overnight.
Don't miss the Longevity Expo this Saturday only at the Maple Grove Community Center. See up to 150 exhibitors. Find all the resources to help you live a longer, healthier, and more active lifestyle. This Saturday only at the Maple Grove Community Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Patrick, are you a fan of the 7-Eleven stores? They are making a comeback in Minnesota.
Actually, just read that story this morning.
Yeah, 7-Elevens are making a comeback in Minnesota as they are going to be buying out Speedways, which makes the convenience store game even more confusing here in town because, what, was it only a few years ago where we had Super Americas that were turned into Speedways? And now Speedways are going to be turned into 7-Elevens. That's like three different variations of a name for what are basically the same stores.
Just to twist your brain even a little bit further, for those who may not know this, for a while Super America and Speedway were co-owned by the same parent. And then Speedway, Super America got spun off, then Speedway's parent bought out Super America entirely and converted all of those stores. And now, as Brad was saying, Speedway in the Twin Cities might be going bye-bye as well.
Yeah, no more Speedways. And you brought up the point that Speedway and Super America were owned by the same company. If you remember those old little jingles they would do on the Super America ad, it was the exact same thing they did with Speedway. They just changed the lyrics a little bit. So, yeah, more proof that they were, of course, owned by the same company. But, yeah, I don't know. This just makes things confusing to have, like, the same convenience store have three different names within, like, a three-year period. I don't know, 7-Eleven was a little before my time, so I haven't been to many of those places. I don't know if things are going to change much. You've had much experience going to those?
I've been to a couple. I don't really have a whole lot to add
neither.
On that.
Yeah, neither do I. So get ready for yet another change, and more importantly, consolidation continues in the convenience store and gas station game. Wonder how much consolidation there has actually been, like, over the past few decades or so. I know there's been a lot. We used to have, like, Tom Thumbs around town. Those aren't there anymore. Mark's Amico's used to have some stations. Those aren't there anymore. So I wonder if we're going to get to the point where it's like you basically have a 7-Eleven and a BP or something like that. Or I can't think of who the other major chains are in that game. All right, so watch for that. Changes coming through in the next few months. Well, if you're in St. Cloud today, you are potentially going to be part of the opening of a new Donald Trump campaign office, as Trump Victory is going to be hosting the grand opening of their new field office in St. Cloud, Minnesota. A very fitting location, by the way, to have the Trump Victory office. The event is going to include remarks from the National Republican Campaign Chairman. Too many chairs in there. Also, Minnesota Congressman Tom Emmer, U.S. Senate candidate Jason Lewis, Trump campaign honorary co-chair Mike Lindell, I didn't know old Mike Lindell from MyPillow was the co-chair of the Trump campaign. And Minnesota GOP chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan are going to be part of that opening of the new Trump campaign headquarters in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Let's talk about some other news for today. So the Bottineau Light Rail Line was supposed to be built by 2024 that would connect downtown Minneapolis with portions of the Northern and Northwest Metro. It was supposed to run from the north side of the city through Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and Brooklyn Park. And I said it was supposed to run because as of now, it unfortunately looks like the Bottineau Light Rail project might be off. The point of contention is that of the 13-mile route, 8 of the miles are currently owned by the BNSF Railway, and they are not budging on allowing Minnesota to have that freight car route shared with the new Bottineau Light Rail Line. So as of now, that project is off, which is very unfortunate because it would connect a lot of areas that have been economically hard hit over the past number of years, talking about Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and Brooklyn Park, that would give them more public transportation. But unfortunately, that's not helping or not going to be happening. And more bad news, since there are a lot of people of color who live in those cities and North Minneapolis that are not going to get access to that line. Supposed to open in 2024, but as of now, it is off. I think it was supposed to connect to the Blue Line, which currently runs towards the Mall of America, so that would have been a nice connection to have from the South Metro to the North Metro, but that one, as of now, not going to be happening. The Southwest line, though, that is still on, though. That is the line that is running from Eden Prairie out towards downtown Minneapolis. I still never got that route that they chose. I still think they should have had that thing run through Uptown. Instead, they're having it run through kind of the Chain of Lakes area, which, of course, I don't think they're going to get quite as much traffic than if they had run that thing along the Midtown Greenway bike trail, where they have plenty of room. I think that would have really helped ridership, but I wasn't in charge of that. Did you kind of follow that at all, Patrick? I remember that happening like 10 years ago when they were debating this thing. I thought that made no sense to have that light rail line go through the Chain of Lakes rather than the Uptown area along, I believe it would have been like 28th Street, then running up Lindale towards downtown Minneapolis. That would have made a whole lot more sense to me in terms of, well, getting more traffic on the trains and giving people a connection to the Uptown area.
It's kind of surprising because you think with aiming it through the Chain of Lakes, which I'm kind of surprised they were even able to get it through there, considering most of those people probably had a very...
Oh, they didn't want it at all.
No,
yeah.
But there was a lot of money there that probably could have influenced to not have it go through there. But I was also going to add on the Bottineau extension that it's kind of an excommunication of sorts on both sides of the... argument, because the BNSF had asked Minneapolis or the Met Council to, they wanted to build in a line to help reduce congestion in one of their own rail yards, and Hennepin County said no because it would have increased freight traffic to too high of a level. So that's kind of why BNSF is, you know, being uncooperative on the Bottineau line at this point. So one analysis I read was that Hennepin County won the battle but may have lost the war in the long run.
Yeah, which very well might be the case right now, saying that, well, the Bottineau line is off at least for now, but could be some changes in the future if they decide to try to find a new route. I would at least think, I'm no expert on like the freight train industry, but I would think you have so many railroad tracks around the Twin Cities that for the most part are not being used. I would think somehow you should be able to convert those to passenger trains that would allow people to have a much easier time to get around. It's probably a whole lot more complicated than I'm making it out to be, but I used to live by a couple of rail lines that almost were never used. I think in the old apartment I was at, we had one train line that I think in like the 7 years I lived in that area, I saw maybe like one or two trains ever use that route. And I would think that could make a great little area for people to use to commute to their jobs. I was kind of up near the Golden Valley, Minnetonka area at my former place. And yeah, there was a little train line that almost no trains ever used whatsoever. All right, Senator Tina Smith, this is a little unexpected given kind of her background in the Senate, but she has put through a bill that would legalize cannabis throughout the country. She has co-sponsored a bill titled the Substance Regulation and Safety Act, and the bill would deschedule cannabis, require the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to develop rules that treat marijuana the same as tobacco, create a national research institute to evaluate the risks and benefits of cannabis, require the U.S. Department of Agriculture to impose quality control standards and mandate that the Department of Transportation study methods for detecting THC-impaired driving. So some other provisions in there, but the most important one is that when it would finally deschedule cannabis, because right now it is still a Schedule I substance, which is absolutely absurd compared to the other substances that are considered Schedule I. So her legislation would at least deschedule it. So good for Tina Smith. Sometimes criticize her on the show for certain stances on issues, but on this one, she's definitely on the right side. To the Minneapolis City Council, this is something that was said by Felipe Cunningham on the Wedge Live broadcast. Wedge Live broadcast is a Twitter feed that covers local news in Minneapolis, and they also do some live internet broadcasts. And a few days ago, they had Minneapolis City Council member Felipe Cunningham on, and he brought up something interesting about how the police have been treating constituents in the 4th Ward over the past few weeks. He says, quote, "I have heard from an overwhelming amount of constituents in the 4th Ward who have not had a police response to gun violence. Constituents have been saying that police are telling them to contact their city council member, blaming them for the lack of response." So there's been reports, yeah, in the 4th Ward that if you end up calling the police to report a shooting or gun violence, the dispatchers are telling people who call 911 to contact their city council person. That's why they're not getting a police response, which is pretty absurd to be told if you're calling 911 to report a crime that that's already happening. So yeah, that's kind of a way we've already seen the police trying to fight back against some of the reform efforts that are taking place in Minneapolis. And one more thing to get to before we head to break. As expected here in Minnesota, the amount of people who have requested absentee ballots is 10 times more than the amount of people who requested ballots back in 2018. Overall, 545,000 absentee ballots have been requested, according to the Secretary of State's office. Secretary of State Steve Simon has cautioned voters not to wait until the August 11th primary date to request or fill out those ballots, being that, well, you have to get those in ASAP. And given all the junk we've been seeing happen with the post office, if you're going to vote absentee, yeah, get it sooner than later. Don't wait until like the day of the election to fill out and then send your ballot back in the mail. If you know who you're voting for, fill it out as soon as possible and then make sure it gets to the proper place. It's the only thing that makes me really hesitant this year about possibly voting absentee is the fact that the post office has been decimated so much, especially with the new person that was put in charge with the post office, that, yeah, makes you a little hesitant to remain confident that your vote is actually going to go to where it needs to go and that it will be counted. It's not the electoral process that's the problem in that case. It's more that the post office has been gutted so much over the past few years, and now you have the new head of the post office basically coming in and slowing things down even more, by the way, with intention as well. Let's talk to Mark in Fridley, who wants to come in on a few topics. Mark, got about 3 minutes for you before we head to break. What are you thinking about today?
Well, I want to touch base on Noam Chomsky today, on Tom Hartman, but I just want to point out that Tina Smith's reversal on cannabis has everything to do with the reelection. So that was a politically convenient thing to do. And that shows you what Noam Chomsky talked about today, because fear makes people do irrational and stupid things. Mm-hmm. And we must focus on who the true power is, and that's corporate power, and that's fascism. Now, the radical right wants to throw around Marxist, and socialist, and communist, but we need to be afraid of fascism. And that was the key context of what Noam Chomsky, because people don't like to hear that their politician is every bit as co-opted or corrupted as the other side. And we need to look at how we got here with this massive mess. And it was the fact that these political parties, these PACs, Citizens United, are all corporate. They're not we, the people. And they are the ones that have privatized democracy. And, you know, our problem is that as a group of people, we're constantly told to blame the other side for the problem and not look internally. Mm-hmm. And until we start to do that, and what we have to do is think back to a person like Paul Wellstone. Did Paul Wellstone ever get accused of being inauthentic or flip-flop or, you know, change his mind or do something that was the antithesis of what he said that he wanted to do? And until we get rid of corporate power and stop the fear-mongering about Russia and China, the enemies are from within. And Noam Chomsky knows that. History knows that. And that we need to hold our side to the same standards as we hold the other side. And it would be difficult to assume that the other side is going to hold our side to the same standard, but we need to figure out who the enemy is, and we need to look at the system design of democracy. And until we get to audit the Fed, until we get civil rights reform, until we get the end of wars, until we get to getting rid of Citizens United, we have a privatized, unequal democracy for all.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Mark, just to address some of your points right there. Yeah, with Tina Smith now becoming someone who is a supporter of legalized cannabis, it'll be important to make sure you hold her feet to the fire in 2021, should she be reelected, because, yeah, she very well could go back to being either anti-cannabis or not just caring about the issue whatsoever, which I find much more likely. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully she fully is on board with legalizing it and descheduling it, but remains to be seen what will happen coming up in 2021 if she wins re-election. The other point he brought up about authenticity, it always wins elections, authenticity. People will vote for you even if they disagree with you if you're authentic. There were lots of people back in the 1990 and 1996 election of Paul Wellstone who were Republicans that ended up voting for him just because they knew where he stood on the issues, even though they disagreed with him on several of the issues. They at least know where he stood, and authenticity is a very underrated characteristic to have when it comes to politics. And the final point Mark was bringing out about making sure you watch corporate power, yeah, absolutely important. In fact, even talking about this ban of TikTok that the Trump administration is posing and other politicians are in favor of, yeah, it's great that we're going to be going after TikTok and regulating that, but not a whole lot of talk about the American social media companies like Twitter and Facebook and others who are just as harmful as TikTok. And even the other point how Mark was talking about that you need to hold your own side accountable, I think that's important to point out, because when we look at the situation we're having, for instance, with federal police going to different cities throughout the country, make sure that we still hold those same politicians accountable when they're Democrats that could end up doing the same thing if they ever end up dispatching federal troops to cities. Got to make sure you hold them to the exact same standards. So thanks for the phone call, Mark. We'll take one final break and come on back with FYI Politics.
As a family-owned business, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has been serving the Twin Cities since 1930. A new furnace or air conditioner from Standard Heating and Air can lower your monthly utility bills, administer more consistent temperatures, and even improve indoor air quality, making your home safer and healthier for the whole family. The average heating and cooling system lasts 15 to 20 years. So if yours is on its last legs, call Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed. Also, the Army National Guard's education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Back on the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, and on this final segment, I want to highlight some programming changes that are going to be occurring on AM 950 starting next week. We are excited to announce that starting next Monday, we are going to be having a brand new weekday morning show that is going to be airing from 6 until 8 a.m. It is going to be the Santita Jackson Show. Santita is the daughter of Jesse Jackson, and she's a nationally syndicated radio host, progressive talker, and she is going to be coming to the AM 950 airwaves next week. And it'll be every weekday from 6 to 8 a.m. That'll be a live show as well, so you'll be able to call in to Santita's show. Of course, that will impact some other programs here on the station, including Ellie 2.0 Radio. So here's what's going to be happening with Ellie 2.0. Starting next Monday, her show is now going to air Mondays from 2 until 3 p.m., which helps me out since I do lots of other things here at the station. So as much as I love hosting this show every day, getting a couple of days off a week is definitely going to help me out. So starting next Monday, you are going to be able to hear Ellie 2.0 at her new time every Monday from 2 until 3 p.m. That'll again start next Monday. And then Santita Jackson's show will be every weekday morning from 6 until 8 a.m. So want to give you a heads up, that programming change begins next week. I know you're really going to like Santita's show, and hopefully you appreciate Ellie moving her show to Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. I know she's excited since now she'll be able to occasionally do some live shows. So you can find that full new schedule over at am950radio.com. I'm out of time for today. I'll turn things over to Matt McNeil, who is coming up next.